Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, the 3rd of June. A very good morning and welcome to Africa Link from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Eunice Wanjiru. In today's edition, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari cancelled his visit to oil producing Niger Delta.
I think the president missed a golden opportunity to demonstrate his totality as a Nigerian. The president could have used this opportunity to speak to people that I'm your president, I care about you.
Ghanaians mark 1 year since their country was hit by a flooding disaster, and they fear that it may happen again.
Sometimes you think of...
Some things you're thinking of, if you're somewhere and it is raining, you have to stop the job you're doing and come back home to at least secure your goods, just a small, you will get and leave the area.
And Zambian presidential candidates hand in their nomination papers to stand for the August 11 elections. These stories and more right after this. Don't go away.
Top story.
Militants have attacked a boat belonging to Nigeria's state oil firm, NNPC, in the Niger Delta, killing at least 6 civilian and military staff members. That's according to the Nigerian military, who say the attacks took place on Wednesday. On Thursday, President Muhammadu Buhari was supposed to visit the Delta to flag off a historic $1 billion cleanup of oil spills in the region. He unexpectedly called off his visit, leaving Nigerians guessing whether this was due to security concerns. He was nevertheless represented by his deputy, Yemi Osinbajo. The cleanup of the Ogoniland region of the Niger Delta is in line with the United Nations Environmental Programme's report, which say that the region is seriously polluted and has to be cleaned up for public health reasons. Sam Olukoya reports from Lagos.
The United Nations Environment Programme says Ogoniland is so contaminated that the cleanup will take between 25 and 30 years to complete. But for environmentalists like Philip Jackbo of the Friends of the Earth, the commencement of the cleanup is an important event.
For us as environmentalists, the commencement of the cleanup today in Ogoniland is a good development. You have the presidential and federal might behind this. So the implication is that it is not going to be a shoddy activity. It's not going to be a shoddy exercise. It is going to be something that is verifiable. And the people of Ogoniland who have been long denied environmental justice are the better for it.
But President Muhammadu Buhari's decision not to attend the historic event at the last moment leaves many Nigerians confused. The sudden cancellation came shortly after reports that a militant group in the Niger Delta Avengers, intends to kill the president if he attends the event. The group, which is fighting for a share of the region's oil resources, has in the past weeks attacked several strategic oil and gas pipelines in the region. It has also asked oil companies operating in the area to vacate the Niger Delta for their safety. Many ordinary Nigerians like Ugochukwu Chimeze think the death threats scared the president away from the event.
Sincerely, security issue, because beginning from the time these Niger Delta Avengers have come on board, there is no place, there is no time they have stated they are going to do this and they didn't do it. Yesterday was Chevron, you know. So I think the president cancelled his movement as a result of security reasons.
Wale Fatade, a social analyst, thinks that Buhari could have used the chance to show the people that he's there for them.
I think the president missed a golden opportunity to demonstrate his totality as a Nigerian. The president could have used this opportunity to speak to people that I'm your president, I care about you, which as it were, that was what the cleanup is all about already. But sending the vice president at the last moment is too bad.
It is the second time in 2 weeks that the president has, at the last minute, cancelled his appearance at major public events. Late last month, he cancelled a 2-day official visit to Lagos. The visit will have made it the first time in 14 years that a serving president has visited the commercial capital. There was speculation that he cancelled the Lagos visit either on health grounds or for security reasons. In a country where the populace keep their president under close watch, President Buhari's image may suffer if he's unable to meet up official duties.
Sam Olukoya in Lagos. To follow up on the cleanup program, I spoke to the executive director of the United Nations Environmental Program, Achim Steiner. I wanted to find out what this cleanup meant for the people of Ogoniland.
Well, I think it is a historic turning point after well over 4 decades of oil exploration in the Niger Delta, and in particular in Ogoniland, the flag off of the largest ever cleanup and restoration effort undertaken in Nigeria, means that for the first time, the communities, but also the local economy, have a reason to look forward to the future in a way that does not further compound the extraordinary damage that has been done. With the announcement of a $1 billion fund for phase one to begin the restoration, we have a true turning point in history. And those were also the words of President Buhari, who was represented here by his vice president.
And how clean will Ogoniland be after this cleanup operation? Will they have removed all the oil traces?
We are talking about an unprecedented effort of cleanup, both in terms of complexity and in terms of quantity of work. So we are looking at least at about 25 years before we can begin to say that conditions are restored, at least to some extent, to what they were before. I think in the immediate future, the priority is first of all to address issues such as drinking water. At the moment, there are communities who are drawing water from groundwater wells where, for instance, the amount of benzene in the water exceeds by 900 times the levels recommended by the World Health Organization. So you can see that there are both immediate priorities that have to do with human health and that of people in the area. And then over time, what is planned is a massive program of actually literally removing soil, freeing it of the hydrocarbons, and then returning it.
But how soon can life return to the areas which were once polluted?
Well, I wish the answer was very soon, but I think the truth is that we are dealing with four decades of neglect, of extraordinary callousness in the way that the damage to the environment was simply viewed as a price that you had to pay for an oil industry to be able to operate. And I think the hard truth is that we are talking about years before people can really look at a life that is not damaged by what we see here today. But I think the important thing, and that was very much the sentiment I think of many Ogoni people, is you have to start somewhere. And for far too long, nobody took responsibility to start. Now, with the UNEP report having been accepted by all parties and by the oil companies and the government having committed the $1 billion, hope has begun to return to the communities. And I think that is both the good news, but also the realistic assessment is that it will take years.
Okay, you've mentioned the UN report, which was released in August 2011, and it said that the region may require the world's biggest ever cleanup of a succession of oil spills. What has changed since this report was issued? I mean, it's 5 years down the line.
Unfortunately, far too little. We in UNEP, as much as any in the Niger Delta and the Ogoni communities, have been quite frustrated by the lack of progress. And it is, I think, to the credit of President Buhari and his government that he not only committed to implementing the UNEP report recommendations when he was elected, but he has now initiated that program and in that sense fulfilled the promise. So we have lost another 5 years in a very tragic story that has affected hundreds of thousands of people and is time lost.
Achim Steiner, Executive Director of the United Nations Environmental Program, UNEP.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
As the August 11 general elections and referendum draw closer in Zambia, fully-fledged political campaigns have started. So far, five parties, including that of incumbent Edgar Lungu, have successfully filed their nominations to stand for the country's highest office. Kathy Sikombe in Lusaka brings us more. We do apologize, though, for the bad quality of some of the sound bites.
Lusaka has been a hive of activity in the past few days as hundreds of political supporters have thronged the streets to catch a glimpse of their candidates filing their nominations for local government, parliamentary, mayoral and presidential elections. So far, at local government and parliamentary levels, candidates across the country have successfully filed in their nominations. At the presidential level, about 10 candidates are expected to put their names forward. Incumbent President Edgar Lungu from the Patriotic Front and his running mate, Inonge Wina, successfully filed their nominations on Thursday. President Lungu told supporters that gathered at the nomination center that his party remains committed to the ideals of the late president Michael Sata and called for unity among party members.
I therefore wish to appeal to all those who have been nominated as MPs, council chairmen and mayors, including me and my running mate, to unite the party. We do not want you to begin sidelining those who aspired to stand in your place.
So far, the only female candidate is Edith Nawakwi from the Forum for Democracy and Development. It's time for Zambia to have its first female president, she says, and her election promise is to alleviate poverty in the country.
Our vision at FDD is very clear. We want to have a Zambia that is poverty-free.
Meanwhile, United National Independence Party, UNIP's Tilenji Kaunda, promised a return to the good days if UNIP is voted back into power. And the country's main opposition leader, Hakainde Hichilema, is expected to file in his nomination Friday. Juliet Tembo, a political analyst at the University of Zambia, says this year's elections will be complicated as the country has combined general elections and the referendum.
So I strongly believe that government should rescind its decision and actually find the money to have a referendum on its own and allocate adequate time to sensitize people and, you know, so that we can have a successful referendum. One very nice thing is that we're seeing a lot of young people wanting to aspire to be office bearers.
I also spoke to voters on the streets of Lusaka, and this is what they had to say.
Zambia is still in the wilderness, so we want around this time to move forward so that we improve our lives in the homes. We want our children, all our children, to go to school, equal rights.
You know, we've suffered too much in these 3 years. Millimeter has escalated and everything else has just gone up. So I expect a change. At least a bag of millimeter should be affordable by each and every household in Zambia.
That report was compiled by Kathy Sikombe.
Human rights.
In human rights this week, we go to Nairobi, where more than 500 members of ethnic groups from Ethiopia have taken part in a three-hour debate that focused on human rights violations in the Horn of Africa nation. They included members of the Oromo people who are opposed to the government's plans to expand the capital Addis Ababa, which they say amounts to land grabbing. The debate took place to coincide with the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Military Administrative Council, known as the DAG, in 1987. On Thursday, participants described the suffering of marginalized groups in Ethiopia today and accused the government of persistently abusing their human rights. James Shimanyula attended the debate and filed the following report.
The debate was sponsored by the Nairobi branch of the rights group Amnesty International. The organization's director for East Africa, the Horn of Africa and the Great Lakes regions, Muthoni Wanyeki, explained the importance of the event.
To remind people, 25 years after the fall of the DERG, there's a long way to go in terms of respect for human rights, but also given recent developments in Kenya, remind people Kenya have a long history of hosting Ethiopian asylum seekers and refugees who are still in need of protection.
Muthoni Wanyeki's colleague Miriam Idris emphasized that every country has an obligation to respect human rights.
I think it is important because human rights violations are not supposed to be looked down upon, and it is upon the role of every state to take into consideration the rights and privileges that people are entitled to.
The debate was also attended by many journalists who claimed to have fled Ethiopia to escape alleged persecution by the government, but they refused to be interviewed, citing their own safety and security. However, I did get to speak to Eba Abba Murti, public relations officer of the Oromo refugee community in Kenya, who described what his people are going through and what response they were hoping for from the international community.
This is a debate about inhuman treatment of the Oromos in Oromia, eviction of Oromos from their ancestral land. Prisons in Ethiopia are full of Oromos. We want the international communities to act on it. We want them to put the Ethiopian government to task for them to condemn the injustice that the Oromos are facing in Oromia. Oromos are now over 50 million, in fact, the largest tribe in East Africa. Every Oromo has a story of persecution in the hands of the Ethiopian government.
The Oromo people make up more than a third of Ethiopia's 100 million population. They live in western, southern, and eastern Ethiopia in a U-shaped belt around the country's central highlands. Kudeta Kumela spoke in the Oromo language. With a straight-to-the-point message to the Ethiopian government, we hear him speaking in translation as well.
I'm telling the government to stop the human rights violation in Ethiopia, especially the Gambela in Ugaden, in Gambela in Oromia. The people are suffering. Innocent people, innocent Oromo people, innocent Gambela people, innocent Ugaden, innocent Amara, they are suffering. So stop killing, stop land grabbing, stop displacing innocent people in Ethiopia.
Now the Oromos and the others are waiting to see if there will be any response from the Ethiopian government to the debate in Nairobi.
James Shimanyula reporting. Today, Ghanaians mark 1 year since the country's capital, Accra, was hit by a fire and flood disaster where more than 100 people died. Flooding is a perennial incident which wasn't tackled seriously at the time until the fire broke out. Now, a year after the incident, victims and survivors of the disaster are worried of a potential recurrence. Isaac Kaleji has been speaking to some of them and brings us this report.
The whole this, my brother in room that, my mommy in room.
So, you know,
Jerry Bachman is showing me what used to be his family's building. It was destroyed in the fire disaster that followed a flooding incident in Ghana's capital Accra on June 3 last year. Jerry tells me he is scared every time it starts to rain. He recounts events after losing relatives and property to the tragedy.
Sometimes, you know, sometimes they think of... See,
some things you're thinking of, if you're somewhere and it is raining, you have to stop the job you're doing and come back home to at least secure your goods, just a small you will get and leave the area.
The tragedy was caused by heavy rains and then leaked fuel from a filling station nearby sparked fire that killed more than at least 150 people. Simon, a student who survived the disaster, describes the impact of the incident on his life since then.
It has affected me a lot of things because even my school fees, my mom was not able to pay because I'm still owing in the school fees because my mother was not working that day. So I'm in the house doing nothing.
As the rains begin to pour, Accra residents like Jerry are becoming uneasy as they witness once again an emerging trend of flooding in parts of the capital due to poor drainage system, even in areas that were affected by last year's disaster. Gutters are blocked and drains have little space for water to flow, as Jerry tells me.
When you come to this area, just look into the gutters. They are choked, and so when it rains, the water can't flow well. If they should dredge it, that will help for easy flow of water. Nowadays, if it starts raining before you realize, your rooms will be flooded.
After the flood and fire tragedy, Ghana's President John Mahama gave an order to have all structures and waterways pulled down. Filling stations situated at unauthorized places were to be removed as well, and then the dredging of major drains in affected areas in the capital city. But it appears city authorities are struggling to enforce this directive to avert another disaster. The mayor of Accra, Alfredo Kovandapoy, has been showing journalists round, telling them what his office is doing to avert a similar catastrophe.
This equipment have been working here since June 10. They've collected all the refuse. There was a pile of refuse over here. They've collected. Now you can see clean water.
The removal of structures Okuvandapoy is talking about hasn't been at the rate at which residents in flood-prone areas will like.
I've seen them distilling.
I have seen them distilled in the Odona area, but anytime it rains, the place gets flooded.
As the country marks a year of this deadly disaster, victims are hoping they can sleep in peace when it begins raining and not experience such a calamity again.
Isaac Kaleji in Accra, Ghana.
Your say.
It's now time to hear what you, the listener, had to say in the stories we've covered. With your say, here is Jane Yingi and Abubakar Jallo.
Well, let's begin this week's You Say with a story that caught the attention of most of our listeners. A Deutsche Welle reporter in Nigeria conducted a one-on-one interview with a girl abducted by Boko Haram.
Now, 20-year-old Christina Ijabla was held by Boko Haram for 2 years, and Maud Makaji from Kaduna State in Nigeria says he does not buy her story. He writes that some people are just telling lies in order to get attention.
But Tanza Netserova is of another view. She says how ridiculous and terrible such things to happen in this modern world. The poor girl is even pregnant. She goes on saying, I wish her all the best in overcoming the horror.
And the final comment on that story is from Alembe Joseph, who says that is really sad. May God help all of them.
Now, Abu, another thing that has been dominating social media is the trial of former Chadian dictator Hissène Habré. Habré was sentenced to life in prison for atrocities committed during his 8-year rule. This was huge this week, not only in Africa's social media platforms, but also international ones. In fact, it's been called Africa's trial of the century.
Quite indeed. There was no kind word for the former ruler. Pavore started the conversation saying, a nice one, impunity should have a payback. And this comment was backed by Gechen Gun, who said, well, what this means is that even the powerful can be brought to justice.
Now, speaking of kind words, I assume there were at least a few people who did not support the trial of the former ruler, weren't they?
Yes, indeed. Patrick Boundin says that I still believe Africa has a selective program regarding prosecution of leaders. We have some who are worse than Hissène Habré. For example, Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who is still roaming freely in Africa with an International Criminal Court indictment over his head.
Abu, anyway, Hissène Habré has less than 15 days to appeal against the sentence. Let's wait and see how that goes. What else are the listeners talking about this week?
Okay, the latest attack by Al-Shabaab in Somalia, where 11 people were killed, including 2 politicians. The attack targeted a 6-story ambassador hotel in the capital, Mogadishu.
And what were some of the comments?
Andrea John from Tanzania said, it's sad that Al-Shabaab is still a thorn in the flesh. We have to look for ways to end this menace. For Anaclet Feruzi, also from Tanzania, he would like to know how many people need to be killed in order for the world to address the Al-Shabaab issue.
Well, that's all we had time for. Thank you so much for your feedback and keep them coming.
Indeed.
Thank you, Jane and Abubakar. And thanks to all of you who contributed to this segment. If you'd like your opinion to be aired on our Africa Link show, do send us your comments on any of the stories we report about, either via SMS to country code 49160957595 10, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or in a letter to Africa Link DW53110, Bonn, Germany. Before we call it a weekend, here's a brief reminder of our main stories. The Nigerian government has launched a cleanup operation in the country's oil-producing Niger Delta. Zambian presidential candidates hand in their nomination papers to stand for the August 11 elections, and Ghana commemorates 1 year since the country was hit by a fire and flood disaster. And there we come to the end of the show. Thank you for keeping me company throughout the week. From our production team, Sela Oneko, Eliane Giladucci, and Michael Tsokovsky, I'm Eunice Njiro, and have a great weekend.